Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. This is a Soleri Report I am particularly excited about. We are joined by a man who needs no introduction on the Soleri Report, Matt Hale. He's a plaintiff attorney, a very successful litigator from the West Coast. He practices in Washington, but 2 years ago he escaped to Idaho, and we just had an incredible event in Idaho thanks to Matt and his wife and just the amazing group of subscribers that we have there. I hope you're completely in cahoots with all of them, Matt. And Matt's been joined us before on the Soleri Report. Great information about how to navigate the health system. But he's also published a whole series of different articles on the Soleri Report. And he has a fabulous way of being able to convert all of his knowledge to how-tos that really help us navigate our world. So I always love talking with him. And as you know, I travel a lot by car, and I think car insurance, having taken as many speeding courses as I've taken to get out of points and listening to the troopers talk about car insurance, I've come to understand it's a highly important, complex topic that I always need advice on. And so I was out with Matt in Sandpoint, and we started to talk about car insurance, among other reasons, Matt, because I'm seeing so many more so many more accidents and problems and bad driving all over the country. And almost everybody watching this, you know, our subscribers almost all have cars. They almost all drive, and something is changing, and they need to change with it. And it's both, you know, how dangerous it is out there on the roads, but also things are changing in the insurance land. And I've never had a better conversation to help me think this through and frame it than driving to and from the airport to your lovely home at Sandpoint. So with that, let me just bring you in and thank you for everything you do. Before we dive in, just tell us a little bit about the meet and greet in Sandpoint, if you will.
So that was a lot of fun. We had people from Canada, Utah, Wyoming. People came from all over. What surprised me was the number of people in my town here that are subscribers. I had no idea. They weren't on Connect, so I didn't think they existed, but they do. So I do want to put out a little plug. Come join us in the North Idaho group on connect.soleri.com if you want. It's a great way to get in cahoots.
And there must be something in the water in Idaho. You know, we also had dinner with the Idaho legislators from the Northern Districts. And I swear there's something in the water because people are so freedom loving, but they're so positive and community oriented. So these are people you enjoy being free with.
When we were looking to move and everything, you would cross the state line from Washington to Idaho, and the culture was completely different. And it's like a different country. It's like the United States 30 years ago or something. I don't know how to describe it. It's just a different culture. It really is.
And it's spectacularly beautiful.
It is.
The view from your home is spectacularly beautiful. Okay, let's dive in. Tell us about the importance of car insurance.
So one of the most dangerous things you do is drive your car. And recently, you've talked a lot about the uptick in auto collisions. And there's no doubt that auto collisions are increasing, and they're increasing in frequency and in some cases severity. And I think that has to do with a lot of variables. I think it has to do with just distraction. You have cell phones, the cars now have big screens, and they just like draw your eye. You want to watch the screen. But in many, many cases, in most of my cases I'm seeing are people just getting creamed into by somebody who was staring at a screen and didn't see the red light, or, you know, and we even recently had a case where a police officer was staring at a screen and blew a red light and T-boned somebody.
Oh my God. Yeah,
it's everywhere, and no one's immune to it. The other thing that I'm seeing a lot of is there's a lot of, how shall we say this, undocumented peoples pouring across the border that all need to drive, and they're driving without licenses and they're driving without insurance. So There's over half my cases now that I'm getting are people are like, well, I don't have insurance. And more I'm getting the case where, you know, my client says, well, I didn't have insurance, and the person that hit them didn't have insurance. And then I have to say, there's nothing I can do for you. Well, what do you mean there's nothing you can do? Because there's no money. There's no money anywhere. There's nothing to get. So,
right.
And their lives are devastated.
Right. And I told you the story of one of the subscribers who was waiting for a part from Amazon and lives in a lovely gated community here in Tennessee, and called the guardhouse and said, "You know, it's really important I get this part. So if Amazon comes, please make sure to let them through." And they said, "Well, you know, we should warn you, we require a driver's ID, a driver's license, to let anybody into the community. And many of the Amazon drivers do not have driver's licenses." So I was
Right.
like, what?
No, the number of it's shocking. And the lack of enforcement in that area, especially in states like Washington, is shocking. It's
So
downright.
I think the bottom line is you want to have car insurance.
Yeah, you want a policy of car insurance. It's really not about it is and it isn't. It's about protecting your assets in case you hit somebody. But it's also about protecting you in case you get creamed and suddenly your life is upended.
And that includes medical expenses.
Yes, it includes
So,
it all. I had an uncle who was killed by a drunk driver. His wife was in the car, she was airlifted, and they got $100,000 because in Oregon at the time you couldn't stack policies and nobody had a big policy of insurance. He didn't have life insurance. I mean, so you these things can dramatically upend your life, and next thing you know, you're facing serious medical consequences, and there can literally be no money to help you through it.
It was one of them. I'm jumping ahead, but one of the reasons I've always had the catastrophic policy at AAA. So I'm a loyal AAA member. I always had the catastrophic policy, so that if you get, more, so I should be covered by healthcare elsewhere, but you just never know what may get added as a result of a transportation accident. So one of the things that really shocked me, because I knew nothing about it, was you described all the electric car issues, and I was stunned. I was just stunned. So, as we start, just dive into what are the issues with electric cars?
So with electric vehicles, there are very few technicians to repair them.
Electric vehicles may be the future for car drivers, but what happens if yours breaks down? Industry experts say that could be a problem. There is a global shortage of technicians and repair shops qualified to fix EVs. That means drivers could face high costs for repairs if they can get one. Experts say that independent repair shops will be vital for making EVs affordable, as they are cheaper than franchise dealers. But many garage owners see costs for training and equipment to fix EVs as too high, especially with few of the cars on the roads. There's a danger too. High voltage EVs could shock or even kill untrained technicians. The risk of EV fires, which are notoriously hard to put out, is also a big concern. The auto repair industry has been short of workers since the global health crisis. A UK-based industry body forecasts that the country could be short 25,000 EV technicians by 2032. That's not great when the country is aiming to ban the sale of fossil fuel cars from 2030. Over in the US, experts predict around 80,000 electrician jobs, including for EVs, will be needed every year through 2031. If you can get a fix, it may not be cheap. British car warranty provider Warranty Wise says garage costs are rising. It says it has to use expensive franchise dealers to fix EVs, as they tend to have more qualified technicians. Warranties on such cars cost more as a result. Now, car makers are scrambling to train technicians. Market leader Tesla has launched courses at US community colleges. It also provides EV training for independent US repair shops. Such efforts will need to pay off fast, or experts say the electric car revolution risks going flat.
And if there's any damage or injury to a battery, the thing burns up. And so, in case after case now, I've represented people who own Teslas and they'll get dinged. I mean, we're not talking a major collision where the car is ripped in half. We're talking a fender bender and they can't get it repaired and it's totaled. and they'll have a $75,000 car where they're giving them whatever the total value of they claim it is, and they won't repair it. They won't touch it because you can't get repair people to touch it.
So let's say if it was not an electric car, the repair would have been $2,500 for some kind of fender bender.
If you have an early 2000s car, right, before right. all of the sensors, you could repair a car for $600. Right. Now, when you rear-end somebody or get rear-ended, there's sensors in every bumper, there's electronics and everything. So all of that costs a huge amount of money to replace, and it's expensive to warrant, to put a warranty on it, because, you know, once electronics get damaged, they seem to never work right. So now a simple, you know, the front of your car has, you hit the sensors, the radars, everything else, all that has to be replaced. It has to be recalibrated. And that's playing a big role in insurance companies suddenly in property damage claims, having to crank up the premiums
right.
To cover those costs that are just suddenly exploding. And then, of course, there's part shortages and labor shortages in the industry. So
let me ask you something. If a repair on a let's say an old car, just mechanical, no sensors, would have been $600, and a repair on a gas car, a regular car with sensors would be, I don't know, $25,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
A Tesla is now going to be $75,000. Does the insurance company pay that $75,000? Or do they stick it to the owner?
Here's the calculation. The calculation is the value of the car the second before it got wrecked. So it's the value of a used car. It's not a replacement right. value. It's the value of the car. And we've just seen electric vehicles start to drop through the floor in value. So they're looking for the cheapest way out. So if they can claim your car's value when you hit, let's say you bought a $70,000 Tesla and you have a loan on it, and you have only paid that loan down halfway, so you owe $35,000. You had a scratch or a dent on it before the collision. You get hit. Now they're telling you the car is worth $25,000. They're going to pay you the total. That's all they're obligated to pay you was the value of the car. They're not going to pay for anything above that. They don't owe the loan, and they don't. You know, if you have loans on warranties or whatever. Because sometimes they'll work that into the purchase loan of the vehicle. They don't pay for that.
So you're still liable for $10,000 on your debt.
Yes.
Even though you were insured. And
correct.
Now you got to go buy a car. So you're
correct.
Really in the hole.
Right.
Right.
Okay, and good luck finding your car for the amount of money they gave you on your car.
Right. We were just discussing, I was over in Middle Tennessee this weekend, we were just discussing how old a car we had to buy and how we would go about finding it. But and part of it was, I told you about this wonderful video I put up at Solari by a mechanic, a wonderful auto mechanic, who said before a certain year, I think it was 2012, you know, I could get out the manual and figure out anything, even if I didn't know the model, because there was logic to it. Ever since they loaded it up with digital equipment, there's no logic. And if you look at how long it takes me to learn a new model, I just can't be bothered. So I will only work on pre-2012 cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I live in a neighborhood where the quality of the car, of the secondhand car repair and household equipment repair is superb. And the notion that the superb people I trust I can't look to them because this thing is bollocksed up with all this digital stuff is so, you know, it's like, why would you lose that? So I'm stripping everything down to no digital. All my household equipment is now it's all mechanical, no digital. And now what I'm trying to figure out is if I have to buy another car, and I want to keep this one going forever, but if I have to buy another car, you know, who can I look to, and does it need to be pre-2012 right. or pre-1985?
It's so hard to tell. One,
I know, it's hard to tell. Okay, so what happens? Do we see more fatalities because of all the sensors and digital equipment, or is it just the screens that's the problem?
You know, I mean, I don't know.
The last time I rented a car, in the terms and conditions, there's this long thing about how I'm under surveillance the whole time.
Right.
And they reserve the right, and I agree that they can use all the data from the surveillance system to negate the insurance and hold me completely responsible. So if I'm a mile over, 1 mile per hour over the speed limit, no insurance. Just the impact of all this digital equipment. I mean, part of it's surveillance, part of it is the cost of getting it fixed, but is it causing any more problems in terms of performance of the vehicle and causing accidents?
I haven't been able to find any real statistics on that. Just logically thinking it through, the more stuff you have to look at, buttons to push, things to play with, it has to play a role, right?
Right.
I mean, I just don't see it not playing a role. The one thing that was interesting to me in the Seattle area during the pandemic was the crashes were just horrific. People were going 100 miles an hour and just causing horrific collisions. I think that there's a plethora of things going on. I think that there's the digital,
right.
It's the health,
right.
There's the, the great poisoning playing a role in it with the drugs and all that stuff that leads to everything from road rage to just spaced out driving.
Right.
And it seems to me that it's just happening more and more. And even as they have more electronics now, cars are supposed to stop before they rear end somebody and warn you and all of these other electronic things. It doesn't, to me, seem to be
working,
making better. Right. Yeah. It's not solving the problem.
One of the funniest things that happened to me very early in the morning, I went into an auto repair place. I was on the road and it was West Virginia, and I got this delightful young man. I mean, he was so wonderful and charming. And what I had was sensors going off. I'm constantly, both in rental cars and my cars, the sensors will just spontaneously go off. And it turns out there's nothing wrong, but you're driving down the middle of the road and you think something's wrong and you better, and it's really a pain. I mean, it wastes a lot of time. Anyway, but he regaled me with all the problems coming from sensors spontaneously turning on when there's nothing wrong and how much they had to deal with that. It was a very interesting conversation. Okay, so let's dive in. One of the things I've been most concerned about and got more concerned when I talked with you was the fraudulent business model that we're seeing develop in many different kinds of companies, financial companies, retail companies. It's something we've talked a lot on the Solaria report about. We're going to be talking about it more. But when I started to talk to you, so let me step back. We did a report with Lucy Commissar last year on insurance companies selling you an annuity or life insurance policy, and then they get bought by private equity who drains the credit out the back door, makes a lot of money draining it. But the policy you think you have is not the policy you have. The credit quality is much lower, and the company is much more likely to not honor their obligations or to play games. Anyway, so I'm thinking, okay, well, what's it like in car insurance? And I got chapter and verse when we talked, but we started with the Allstate story. So why don't...
it's an important story to, I think, build a foundation for people to really get what goes on with car insurance. So back in the 90s, 92, Allstate, they were planning on filing an IPO because Allstate was owned by Sears at the time. It's kind of a fascinating story. Allstate hires a consulting firm called McKinsey & Company, which just happens to be the most famous consulting firm in probably the world.
Yes.
McKinsey had worked with other insurance companies with some success, like State Farm. They created their Achieving Claims Excellence program. And to understand insurance and the role of insurance, you pay a premium dollar. And traditionally, the premium dollar went about 60 to 70 cents to this thing called the claims fund. And the claims fund is a trust fund where the insurance company is setting that money aside to protect you should you have a claim. So the money's there to pay for your claim. And traditionally, insurance made their profits through the other 30% through more efficient claims handling, cutting overhead, things like that.
And also the investment profits on the reserve.
Well, that comes in, that comes next, because they're making money because they get to invest that claims fund and into various ways of investing it. They have to be careful because they're regulated. And then there's usually it's around 5% of the premium dollar was just for sheer profit.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies know math well. They know collisions well. They know claims well. So they know how to judge that, how to make that premium dollar go. McKinsey came into Allstate and said, and I'll distill this down.
And what year was that?
It started in 92.
92.
And from what we know, they consulted with Allstate for the next 3 to 5 years. And they did what's called the CCPR, the Core Claims Processing Redesign. And what McKinsey presented to Allstate was, we're going to make this a zero-sum game. Allstate will be the winner and everyone will be the loser. And we're going to get this claims fund and we're going to turn it into a profit center. So what they said was, every claimant who recognizes the shareholder value of their claim can have prompt payment. But if they want fair payment, they have to go to boxing gloves litigation. And what McKinsey discovered was that if they forced claims to go to a jury verdict, juries didn't pay very much money. You know, there's a myth that juries overpay in this country, and it's a very well propagandized myth. We've talked about hot coffee. You know, every jury trial you do now, that case comes up as a reason why, you know, people are getting jackpot justice and it's just not fair and it's driving up insurance rates for all of us. The reality is the opposite. The reality is, McKinsey told Allstate, was jury verdicts tend to be lower than fair settlements. So we're going to force now all these claims to go on. So you're going to go from good hands to boxing gloves litigation. And it's a zero-sum game. What a zero-sum game is there's a winner and a loser and nothing in between. And to view each case as a zero-sum game. So you get rear-ended by somebody with Allstate insurance. You end up having to treat for back and neck pain and injuries for 6 months. You lose work. You may have some permanent residual problems. And now you are facing either a unreasonably low settlement promptly, or they're going to drag litigation out. And their goal was over 3 years, because they found that after about 18 months, most people would want to drop it and settle, or the attorneys would want to drop it and settle, because we're not dealing with the big claims. So they said, the little tiny claims, settle them. The really big claims, settle them. The middle claims, that's where you're going to make your money. And that's the majority of claims.
Right.
So the whole industry got remade into this boxing gloves litigation, and these strategies to nickel and dime and save pennies on tens of thousands or millions of claims.
Right.
And so now claimants, it's a fight. It's a fight to get insurance companies to pay fair, just verdicts.
Right. So I'm going to say this. I'm not going to ask you to say this, but what I'm saying is, you entered into a contract with someone, and in my opinion, there is a material omission going on, and that material omission is they have no intention of honoring your contract.
Right. You entered in. You didn't just enter into a contract. The law says they have a fiduciary relationship.
Right.
And when it comes to claims, they have to put their interest equal to yours. And they said, no, we're going to undo the whole model. We're going to throw that in the garbage.
Right.
And you're going to recognize our profits in your settlements. And so they recreated the whole system to grind cases down, fill the courts with litigation. They have set up now.
So you as a taxpayer are paying higher municipal costs or getting poor municipal performance because the court costs are going up. Right.
Yeah. Your courthouse is getting used by insurance companies to adjust their claims.
Right.
Here's what it really, to me, comes down to. You're getting sent to collections by your medical providers because your medical bills aren't getting paid. You know, you're not putting food on the table because you can't get the money you need to recover from the lost work and the fact, you know, you couldn't walk for 6 months or whatever. You know, you now have to spend your time in lawfare while right. this insurance company goes through all of your social media right. and everything.
But it gets better. You're having to use your credit card, and because they basically made user illegal, you're paying 17% to 30% for, you know, the money you're borrowing on your credit card to feed your kids.
Yeah, and good luck claiming that.
Right. Right.
So you are insurance plays a social role. You know, you wouldn't be driving if it wasn't for insurance. I mean, people would be losing their houses. The insurance social role is so important to keeping our economy going. And what they've done with casualty insurance and the industries that have sprung up around that to support this boxing gloves approach to everybody, it's straight up devastating. And, you know, just a story. I was talking to an insurance claims expert. And State Farm had a program years ago with an expert, and the expert, I can't remember, it was State Farm or Farmers, but it was one of the big names. In a house fire, they'd send out this expert. He would go up on the roof, and the fire department would always cut a hole in the roof with a gas-operated chainsaw or one of those big cutters to vent the roof. He would go up, he would test for gasoline, he would find traces of gasoline or propellants, and mm-hmm. then they claimed the homeowner it was insurance fraud and arson.
Right.
Now you're stuck. You don't have a home, and they're fighting you tooth and nail to deny your claim, and somehow the court system that you're going to have to get through the court system in a matter of years.
Right, but you're up against pros.
Yes.
They got experts who've done 200 of these, right? Right.
No, they do 200 a year. Like right. their lawyers do this. This is what they do day in, day out. They're hiring consultants. There's a whole industry that begins to pop up where studies are being done to show that apparently if you get rear-ended, your back healed in 3 months and any residual pain was just because of degeneration. Right. And there's doctors, they're paying millions of dollars a year to testify in case after case after case, because when an insurance company saves $1,000 on a million claims, they make $1 billion.
So that's how. One of the key issues to understand before you price a car insurance policy is it car insurance or is it car insurance fraud? Which one are you buying?
Well, so one of the things I said to you in the car was do not be brand loyal. You right. cannot be brand loyal. And one of the examples I use is USAA. The people who are members of USAA tout it up and down and they just love it and how great it is. And then they have a claim and they go to use their personal injury protection, which is supposed to pay their medical bills. And then all of a sudden USAA shows up with this, with this program, Auto Injury Solutions, and Auto Injury Solutions starts to underpay your doctors, starts to deny your medical bills. And your doctor's coming up to you saying, I'm not getting paid. I'm not going to treat you anymore. You need to pay this now. I have to keep my overhead going. So, you know, if you can't pay now, then they're upset because, you know, these $20 or $30 deductions, end up costing them most of their case because they can't, it just stops everything. The Washington State Supreme Court in the last few months made a decision, and the decision said that insurance companies that are paying medical claims, and understand this is a coverage in Washington, it's called PIP. It's usually a $10,000 limit. They're just supposed to pay your bills that are reasonable, necessary, related to the collision. They're now using software and databases to say, well, that's above the average, and we're going to pay 80% of that bill. So the Supreme Court of the state of Washington just said, that's okay. You can do that. That's not insurance bad faith. Now, here's the catch. This is where it really gets sticky. Health insurance is a payer of last resort. It will not kick in until those personal injury protection benefits are exhausted. Once they're exhausted, then the health insurance kicks in. Now you're a ping pong because you can't get your medical bills paid. Your PIP policy is not exhausting, and your health insurance.
They're saying, oh, it's his. It's his. You go back and forth.
Now, right. Drag this on for 3 years of litigation. You know, you're getting deposed, and now the other insurance wants to do a medical exam on you, and you have to give up your records. And if you're claiming lost wages, they want your taxes, and they want 10 years of prior medical history, and they want to know every insurance you've ever had and every claim you've ever made. And it just goes on and on and on.
Right. And they're looking for one parking ticket they can get you on and make you look bad.
Anything, it's actually worse than that. It's not even a parking ticket. Anything to make you look like you're a liar. Because their defense is, you weren't hurt, you're lying, you just want this for the money. They are looking, they don't have to go to parking tickets, they go to your social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many cases I have just had go off the rails in innocent social media posts, even from friends. Dear so-and-so, it was so nice to see you out on that hike the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking good.
Right. There you go.
Your client just testified that she can't hike. She hasn't been able to hike. And then this comes, gets thrown in her face, and she's now got to explain, well, actually, I was in the parking lot. I was trying to hike. You know, I made it 100 yards. I was turning around. I ran into my friend. And it's awful because, you know, I've had them go after Fitbit data.
Right.
You know, Apple Watch data.
Everything data. Is surveillance. Everything is surveillance.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about the insurance ecosystem, because there are different kinds of players. So there are companies that are mutuals and companies that are publicly traded. And my personal experience is much better with the mutuals. Is that a reasonable?
I think it depends on the company. By their deeds, you shall know them, right?
Yes.
My experience has been local and smaller companies tend to be more fair.
Right.
So publicly traded companies, Allstate or Geico, they've put all these things in place. State Farm is a mutual, I believe. They wanted to be the most profitable on their claims. But the local small insurance companies tend to be more fair and tend to be less likely to want to put in all the effort to hire counsel and have lawyers on salary.
Yeah, they don't have the destroy you machine.
Right.
So we do have regulators. There are state attorney generals and there are insurance commissioners, and this is a state function.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Have some jurisdictions said, no, this is a criminal model. This is financial fraud. We don't want you doing this in our state. Have any states pushed back?
Some have. It's fascinating because what happens when the insurance companies say, oh, we're not going to play in your court then.
Right.
Or we're going to raise rates then because of your policies. So there's always this political push-pull. Now there's a lot of upset about insurance companies pulling homeowners insurance out of California. So in some aspects, yes, states have been able to, Allstate has since had to rework what they did with McKinsey. I'm not sure where they're at, but they got sued a lot and had to pay a lot of money when this came into light. But in some respects, you know, it depends on every state is individually regulating this. In some states, like Washington, for example, is a blue state. They tried to pass some laws that would punish insurance companies for this. That got reined way back. And so now arguably an uninsured motorist or underinsured motorist claim is when the other person or the person who hit you doesn't have insurance. So you make a claim to your insurance.
Right.
And for example, in Washington, they can fight those claims and really not face any sort of liability beyond the policy. It's really hard to prove bad faith or some, you know, Insurance Fair Conduct Act claim unless it's blatant.
Right.
So there's still that, there's still a profit motive in being able to put people through boxing gloves litigation.
So I can keep going through the ecosystem. I can go to an insurance broker. So I've always had a local broker who I knew and some of my colleagues knew and trusted. who could help us navigate, or I can just go online and buy, which the idea of going online and buying, I think is, you know, I want a human being I can talk to and hold accountable. Describe the, you know, the broker versus the online marketplace.
I had an experience, and I work with a broker, and I was talking to somebody about claim, a lawyer, a colleague of mine, and he was talking about his personal insurance, and he had this underinsured motorist umbrella of $1 million that would pay if he got hit by somebody without insurance. And I said, how did you get that? And he said, well, I just had to contact my broker. So I call my insurance guy and I'm like, look, I want this. And he said, well, I'll call underwriting at this company and see what we can get. And so when you go online and start checking boxes about coverage, they're not going to underwriting to give you a special policy. And you want a broker, who's not tied to one company. So, you know, there's Allstate agents, there's Geico agents. You want an insurance broker who's an actual broker who can look at a myriad of companies, not just the bigs, and quote you what you need, right?
Right.
And so I would ask that broker, okay, I just got hit really bad by somebody without a license, no assets, and no insurance. What coverage do I need? What coverage do I need to get through this? Right. And
I would say everybody needs this, right?
Yes, everybody needs it.
Everybody needs it.
Yes, right. Because you'll think, so most policies are written in what's called a policy limit and then a claim limit. So you'll see two numbers. In Washington, the minimum is $25,000 and $50,000. I think in California, the minimum is like $15,000. It's just ridiculously low. It won't even pay through a walking past the emergency room door, let alone going in. So it's a per person per claim limit. And those, your liability limits usually match your underinsured motorist limits. So, and I've seen this just so many times, it's heartbreaking. You're driving your car, you get walloped, and the insurance company's writing you a check for your $25,000 policy limit. I'll tell a horrible story. I represented a family where mom is, I knew her. Mom was driving her one-year-old. They didn't know who the dad, they didn't know where the dad went. He had fled. And they got wiped out by two kids racing in their dad's SUV. Dad had a $50,000 policy and the mom had a $25,500 policy. And so this little boy was orphaned and I didn't charge a fee. Even the insurance companies were trying to figure out how to get as much money for this little boy as we could. And the most we could get was $125,000.
Mm.
So I want you to imagine, you know, you get killed and your family's getting 25 grand. How are they going to do it? I've seen people lose houses.
Now, if they have life insurance, that will help. But if they have...
Yes, an accidental death would kick in.
Right, accidental death. And then, so when I'm buying car insurance, what do I want so I have a much higher amount than that 25 or 50?
So what you want is you want to maximize, this is my opinion, and it's expensive. Most states, Washington calls it personal injury protection, which is a medical payments system. It's a no-fault insurance. You want to maximize that.
Right.
I've seen policies as high as $100,000. That pays without, it should pay without deductibles, without, you know, all the stuff that comes with health insurance up to its policy limit. Then you should have a maximum, and usually that's either $250,000 or $500,000 in uninsured motorist coverage, which will also maximize your liability coverage because they're usually those two have to match. And then if you can find an umbrella over the top of that, then that kicks in, that would kick in after that. Chances are you're not going to have a big life insurance policy on your children.
Right.
Or a big accidental death policy.
Right.
Chances are you're not going to have, you know, especially if you're left disabled, where you're going to have to go to physical therapy and have all this other stuff happen for the rest of your life, there's not going to be enough money for that. And right. So you want to make sure that if you're left, I guess, disabled, you can make it for a certain amount of time.
Right. So I used to have great disability insurance before the litigation, and then I had to let it go. And one of the things we did in the COVID-19 forms, in the family financial disclosure form, is basically require a spouse who wanted to take the shot to get the disability, and make sure they had the health so that if they were disabled or killed, the family wasn't bankrupted. So, but the same applies. Yeah, the same applies for auto. Right.
And, if you're working a trade or you work with your body, that's where suddenly, you'll have the two injuries that I see that are the seatbelt comes across and the collision is such that it tears the rotator cuff in the shoulder.
Right.
Or you end up with a brain injury because of the sloshing of the brain back and forth. And those really can derail people. And it can take a long time to get over those. And you're looking at a lot of pain and suffering and inability to work. And I look at a policy, I view a policy as the insurance company may not pay it. They may fight me on it, but at least I've got something to go after. Right.
Right.
Because I have something to go get. And because if you have nothing to go get, then you're just stuck.
Okay, so I'm listening to this and I'm thinking this sounds great. How do I look at policies and understand the terms and conditions, price them out, and then how do I choose a company or a broker? How do I know who the good guys are that I can trust? How do I find them?
I think if you ask the question, so brokers, at least the insurance broker I've used, he isn't real successful because he won't write cheap policies. And so he loses customers all the time. They want to go save a buck, so they go to somebody else. But he's like,
right.
I got in a big fight with him over something called safety glass, no non-deductible safety glass replacement. And it was kind of expensive. And I said, why do I need this? I can just pay for a new windshield. And he said, no, you're going to put that on there or I'm not writing your policy. So I said, fine, I'll pay for it. And then I proceeded to go through three windshields that got rock chipped and banged up because of all the road construction. So I had to call and eat crow and say, yeah, you were right. Mm-hmm. So you need somebody who's going to go over it with you and explain what these coverages are so you understand, and then work with you in putting together the right policy, not the cheapest policy.
Right. Right. I can't imagine why anybody in this environment would focus on price. I want to know I'm covered and that they're in the insurance business instead of the insurance fraud business. And,
right.
And then, to compare somebody who's in the insurance fraud business with somebody who's in the insurance business, it's not the same product.
No, it's not.
Right. Right.
And it's not the same experience because when you've been through a physical trauma that didn't have all the stress of the finances around it,
right,
really slows your healing down. I'll tell you that.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So let's turn to when an accident happens, Matt. So an accident happens, the other party may have insurance, you have insurance. What happens when you have to start making claims, and if they don't honor their claims?
So yeah, this is fun. And it's not. You get hit. And so the other person has insurance. Now you have two companies. And sometimes it's the same company. So they pull out their insurance card. You exchange information. You make a claim. And so there's two parties involved. There's the first party, which is your insurance. And the third party is their insurance. And nobody knows what happened to the second party. So your first party insurance is, if you have a medical claims coverage, is going to be paying for your medical bills, and you're going to be interacting with them, right? And you're going to be interacting with them differently because you have a contractual agreement with them. You have to cooperate with them. You have to talk to them. You have to give them what they ask for,
Typically, are they cooperative, or do you have to float a lot of the expense until they come through?
It depends on who you have.
Right.
If you have a company like USAA that wants to kick in with auto injury solutions and start adjusting your claims down and playing games with the medical provider, then you're going to have to deal with that. And more I'm seeing that happening, especially now in Washington, since the Supreme Court said that's okay. You're going to have to be prepared to fight, to cough up money, to get through this process. The other driver's insurance. Okay. So there's two claims that come out. There's the property damage claim to fix the car. And in that claim is a loss of use of the vehicle, meaning the amount of time that vehicle isn't there for your use. And then there's the actual repair of the physical damage, or if it's a total loss, paying that total loss. You may have that coverage. And so oftentimes I hear people say, I have full coverage. And they think that means they have personal injury protection. What it really means is full coverage is required by lenders so that your insurance will pay for any damage to the car to protect their interest, right?
Right.
So if you have full coverage, you have a choice. You can go to your insurance to have them pay the damage of the car, and then they go get the deductible from the other insurance, or you go to the other insurance, the third party insurance, and get them to pay for the damage to the car.
Right.
Here's the difference. The third party insurance owes you no duty of good faith and fair dealing. They owe you nothing.
Right.
Now, when it comes to property claims, they're told they need to be fair and prompt. Your insurance owes you a duty of good faith and fair dealing. But your insurance, 9 times out of 10, is going to say, no, since it's not your fault, you should go to the other driver's insurance.
Can you say, well, I want it from you, and then you go get it from them?
Yeah.
You have the right to insist.
Yes, you have the right to insist, because that's the agreement. But you know, we don't need to go through all that. You just go over there. So once you get past that, now you got to get your car fixed. Meanwhile, you're injured. So there's this haggling going on. You got to get the car to a body shop. It has to be appraised. That mess. You don't have a car to go to work, and you're injured. So now you got to go get seen by a medical provider. And any proof of your injury is going to come down to medical records. So you have to be seen. If you're not seen, then you won't have a claim. Meanwhile, the third-party insurance is blowing up your phone. They're saying, well, we'll settle your case. We'll pay you $3,000 and 3 months of medical bills. You just give us the bills. We'll pay it. Right? They're trying as hard as they can to settle your case before they know what was going on. I had a client call me one time. He said, I reached this settlement, but it turns out I need surgery 4 months afterwards. And the 3 months had already passed. And so we had to go fight to undo the settlement. And then it was a big mess. So You've got this pressure coming from this insurance, and they're going to want to do recorded statements and all of this with the third party insurance. You don't do any of it. Meanwhile, your first party insurance is bugging you for statements and trying to investigate what happened. So it's really a stressful, harried, confusing time when this
happens. Okay, but what we're talking about is a major investment of time.
Yes.
Right. And you know, I'll say it again at the end, but I'm going to say it now. Driving carefully, you know, and doing everything you can to drive defensively, and spending the time to get the right insurance and the right company and the right broker up front. Spending money on the front end is a lot cheaper than spending all this time on the back end. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there are, you know, if your insurance company, the good insurance companies call you up and they say, this is how we're going to take care of it. A, B, C, D. Done. Your insurance. The other driver's insurance may or may not be reasonable.
Right.
You know, chances are they're going to have one of the big companies, and the big companies are going to try and make money off your claim.
Right.
And it's a long, drawn out mess. Now, here's the other fun part about having a big company is you get sued. When I sue for an automobile, I'm not suing for a collision. I'm not suing the insurance company. In fact, that's the big secret in the courtroom. You don't even get to talk about insurance in the courtroom. They wheel in their poor insured client. They're actually paying that person to be there in the courtroom to look like they're broke, you know, to sit in front of the jury. And insurance is not mentioned once. It can't be. It'd be a mistrial mentioned, right? And so, but here you are. Now you have to get sued. Your credit is impacted. Try getting a mortgage when you have an open lawsuit. Try getting anything to happen when you have an open lawsuit. And it's all because your insurance company won't settle that claim. Now, I've had instances. Where
so your insurance company being unreliable can destroy your credit.
Yeah. You can get judgments entered against you. Now you got to go explain that.
Right.
And I've had insurance companies, I've had when I've sued somebody and they got smart and they went and said they went to their own lawyer, I got a call and I said, it was a friend of mine. He said, so-and-so just walked into my office. You're suing him. I said, yeah, this is what's going on. He goes, don't worry, I'll take care of it. 2 weeks later, we settled the case because he called the insurance company and said, enough, stop it. My client doesn't want to be sued. We're going to sue you for bad faith. And that insurance company folded.
Right. Right. Well, but that's what happens when you have enough, you know, I hate to say this, when you have your own army.
Right.
You know, when the people have an army, then these guys can't, because part of what they're doing is they're turning an army. I live in Tennessee. I live in a zip code that has a very low per capita income. And for years, when I first moved here, I would get these calls, Matt, from predatory lenders playing all sorts of games and trying to talk me into all these scam predatory deals. But here's the thing. The guys calling could have been a senior associate at Kervas, Wayne & Moore in New York. You know, these guys were so smart. They were like 150 IQ. And when I tell you, they had a, you know, they had a plan and a strategy, and they had lines and scripts. They were good. And, you know, I used to really enjoy negotiating on Wall Street with the attorneys, because I used to negotiate all the bond resolutions and documents and everything else. And I'd go up against, I did a lot of hostile merger deals. And I would have to, you know, go in and war with the attorneys. And it was fun because they were so smart. And I loved, you know, kind of beating them. And, you know, these guys were top flight. They were really, really good. And I thought, how in the world is anybody in a rural area of Tennessee who doesn't even have a high school education going to go up against these guys? It's unbelievable. Anyway, so
that claims representative in the last month has handled more automobile collisions than you ever have.
Right.
They've been well trained. They have a script. They have adjusters or claims representatives who are there just to deal with unrepresented people, because they have a different set of training than people who get a lawyer, right? So I'll have...
Well, but the other thing is, you know, I was dealing on the predatory lending side with people who are on a commission system and who absolutely believe that psychopathy is fun. You know, so stealing from poor people is fun. And if you can do it, you get a big commission. And what's not to love about that?
And these guys, these adjusters, these claims representatives are getting bonuses based on what they call leakage, which is overpaying on claims. So if they keep the leakage down, their claims are audited, they get bonuses.
I love all these words that allow you to be insane.
Right? Yeah. I worked for just in law school, I clerked for a firm and they did disability claims. And there was a company called Provident. And we actually had a former Unum Provident claims representative come in who was getting her claim denied now. But when they denied claims, it came out that every time they denied a claim, they'd have ticker tapes and balloons and a celebration that was just programmed. So boom, you get like, I denied a claim. And it was like a party, right? It was like trying to potty train my son. Yay! and then, you know, there's bonuses and there's performance bonuses. And a lot of pressure to, I once saw a document where an insurance company brought in the Scientologists to consult with their claims people because they were having a problem of people committing suicide at their desks. And it's really, human beings sometimes have a hard time when you get someone to resolve a case for $2,000, knowing full well they're completely disabled and just destroyed. So it's a vicious.
I remember talking to a wonderful subscriber who was working in an insurance company and started to watch them do fraudulent things. And it literally made them sick. And they had to leave because it was, you know, it was so horrifying. But, you know, they also have a way, I've found companies have a way of systematically identifying people who are sociopathic or psychopathic and very happy to do these things.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about enforcement. We're going through the ecosystem. You have the troopers and the police who are watching all of this and dealing with this. How do they fit into the picture?
It's kind of been interesting, and I can only talk about Washington. I'm finding that there isn't a lot of enforcement on the failure to have insurance. It seems to ebb and flow. You're supposed to get your license suspended if you hit somebody without insurance and you don't have insurance coverage to cover the claim.
Right.
So enforcement's been mixed. I've seen cases where, especially with undocumented people, that they just look the other way, like they just ignore it.
But if there's in an accident, if there's criminal or civil liability, you know, if one party's clearly wrong and there's civil or criminal liability, how does that impact the insurance?
So the only time it comes up a lot in drinking and driving, when you get hit by a drunk driver, it does make the liability picture a lot clearer, and the insurance company tends to want to resolve that faster. And sometimes, in Washington, they have the Crime Victims Compensation Program, which can kick in to help pay bills if you're injured by somebody committing a crime. Drunk driving qualifies for that.
Right.
What I found is it depends on the police jurisdiction. So if you're in Seattle and you get hit, the cops aren't showing up. It's not happening. Nobody's coming to investigate. You're on your own. You have to prove your case, and you better get the evidence to do it. In a lot of jurisdictions, the police just don't have the time to show up, especially in the cities. In the rural areas where I'm at, yeah, they show up. It's something to do. But in the bigger cities, more and more, I'm just seeing cops not showing up and doing really bad investigations.
How do you file a police report? Don't you need the police report for insurance?
So you can, most states you can file your own report.
Right.
Or it's enough to have just called 911 and do something.
Right.
Here's the problem is that, you know, police, when they do a good job, they're interviewing witnesses, they're gathering contact information for all these people. You know, they're not in physical shock. So they know how to do all this. And when they don't show up, when it comes down to who runs the red light, and there's no witnesses to talk about who ran the red light, and both are saying, I went through on a green. If you don't have a decent police response and somebody interviewing witnesses, you're going to lose your case. There's just no proof.
So there any way I can get trained so I know how to collect whatever evidence I can before I leave the scene?
There is. I think I wrote an article on that.
That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, your cell phone offers a great way. You got cameras and recordings.
Right.
He was French client, and he interviewed the person on camera. You're on camera. Why did you run that red light? And the person just confessed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to run it. I wasn't paying attention. And then later tried to deny putting the red light. And then, well, here's the video. And then, you know, that changed the whole dynamic of the
case.
That's
very French.
Yeah, it was great. But you have to understand now, you don't just have a claim. You have the potential to be drug into a court or to drag that other driver into court. And now you're both getting drugged through the mud in absolute lawfare. And if you don't have the proof, too bad, so sad, we're not paying you. So think about, you almost have to be your own CSI, right? I got to take my pictures. I got to prove who is driving it. One of the things that I'll see people do is they'll never get the driver's license of the person who is driving. They just assume they get the license plate and that's enough.
Right.
And then somebody says, I sold my car or I wasn't driving it. And now you can't get to the actual driver of the car because nobody knew who was driving it at the time. And that can be a...
You can't prove.
Right. And the burden of proof is on you. People say, well, this is what happened. They have to... No, it's on you to prove it. You have to prove it all. You have to prove liability, injuries, damages. That's on you. And if you can't prove it, you lose.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about doctors, hospitals, healthcare. You know, unfortunately, we're watching a real deterioration in the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, you know, a lot of people are afraid to go to hospitals. Talk to us about doctors, hospitals. What happens if I need to go to the hospital?
So there's two ways to think of this. It's never that clear. If it is that clear, then there's no question, go to the emergency. You have to go to the hospital, right? You have broken bones or whatever, you're getting transported in an ambulance to the hospital. In most cases, you get hit, you have an adrenaline rush, you don't feel anything until the next day when it feels like you've been hit by a truck.
Right.
And going to the ER can be, it seems to be getting worse and worse. It used to be, well, go get checked out at the ER. And now it's turning into, you know, a $10,000 bill for a doctor that said you're fine. And the ER records are a mess and it's all electronic now and they're busy dealing with everything else. If you don't have a major trauma, I'm telling people now, don't go to the ER, get started at your doctor. Or if you need to get in, go to one of those small urgent cares that they're popping up over the place and you can get lined up that way to go get whatever treatment you need to follow up. Because the other thing that can happen if you go to the ER and you didn't need to is they'll eat up, you know, they'll have a $10,000 bill on your $10,000 PIP policy. And now you're limited, right? Let's say you want to go to a chiropractor to deal with your back injuries and your health insurance doesn't cover chiropractic or it only covers 10 visits. And so it can be a mess that way.
Right. Okay. So let's turn to some special issues. And this is my favorite one. Your stories were frightening. And that is your public persona. So you get into one of these litigation situations and suddenly all's fair in love and war. And anything you've ever said or done that is public, you know, is on the table to be used. So talk a little bit about the issues of what you're up to on social media while you're trying to deal with this.
Social media to me is, I mean, like you're on the devil's playground. I what people put on Facebook, I had a client one time say, well, what do you mean they get my Facebook? And I said, well, she goes, no, that's private. I said, no, there's nothing private about it. And then she just went, but I sold my pain pills over Facebook Messenger. And I'm like, why would you do that? Like, seriously, why would you do that? Why do you think that's a good idea? It's that old, you know, when you watch them, they're reading the rights, what you say can and use will be used against you. I can go on and on about stories, but your entire Facebook history can be downloaded, for example, into a nice package. And that package goes to the insurance investigators who are instantly going through all the social media to find you on everything they can. And you really have there's no privilege. There's no right to privacy in social media. So, you know, you're claiming an injury. I had a client who, one of the injuries that happens when you're grabbing the steering wheel, and it's especially for women over 50, you injure the metacarpal joint, which is this joint right here. And that is horrifically painful. And so here she's testifying about what she had to go through with her hand. And they're holding up pictures on her Facebook of her pinching and holding wine glasses. And then she did this push-up challenge that was going around Facebook, where she's doing push-ups on Facebook to raise money for something or whatever. That entire history got thrown in her face. I early on, I did a case where the client was trying to claim a knee injury. His knee had hit something. And I'm just watching him get deposed, and the smirk kept growing on the defense lawyer's face. She just couldn't help herself. And finally, she just throws down this picture that she'd printed out from a Facebook post. And he's sprawled out in the snow. This is posted the day after his collision. And they said, dude, that was a gnarly crash. How's your knee? Done. It's over. You're a liar. We can paint you as a liar. And now you're stuck explaining away. So
let me ask you something. Before you take on a client, do you require to review their whole social media history?
No, I don't. But
no?
Before I file a lawsuit, I want to know what's going on. You bet.
Right, exactly.
Because it's something that just shows up. People try and hide stuff, but they posted about it on Facebook. It's like,
so everybody, you hear this expression again and again, because I love privacy. You know, I have nothing to hide. And but if you look at Nest systems in your house, or the Ring thing on your front door, or the GPS or the phone you're carrying, you know, basically we are walking around and integrating into our lives surveillance equipment that we're maintaining, we're paying for it, and we're basically putting ourselves under 24/7 complete surveillance.
Right.
So,
and here's the deal. Here's what people have to get. It's not that you do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with going on a hike. It's whatever they can twist to make you look like a liar.
Right.
That's the lawfare right. aspect of this that I think we're all.
Well, one of the reasons I love the documentary Hot Coffee, you mentioned it earlier, is, you know, they make that lawsuit sound like it's frivolous. And once you understand the actual facts, it's not frivolous at all. You know, it's a totally reasonable, intelligent lawsuit.
How long ago was that? How long ago did that? That was what?
At least 20 years. I think the documentary was made around 2012.
There's not a jury that doesn't bring it up.
Really?
It is the siren song of tort reform. People right. took that hot coffee excuse and they'll like, you'll have a potential juror and they just have to bring it up every time. Well, what right. about the hot coffee case where she got paid millions and these cases are ridiculous? And then you sit there and your stomach kind of sinks and you break out in a sweat and you're like, okay, we got to deal with this now.
Right.
And you're right, because that turned into this huge propaganda opportunity for the insurance industry to drive down those claim values.
Right. So a word on archiving. We constantly at the Silly Report stress the importance of archiving. But, and this gets back to spending time on the front end. You have to have your records. You have to have your policies. You have to have complete archives on, you know, it comes back to you have to produce the evidence. You have to be able to prove everything.
Everybody wants paperless, and even insurance policies now are paperless. You have to, I would recommend ordering, reaching out and getting certified copies of your policies before you make a claim. I've had cases where we've had three or four different certified copies of the policy, and they're different policies that they're claiming are in effect, and they're going to make a difference either way.
So I have a copy of my policy, but if I need a certified copy, what's the difference and how do I get that?
You just call the insurance company and ask, and you'll get a little certificate with it that says, this is the true and correct copy. I reviewed it and stamped by like a notary. Okay. Yeah. Cause and here's another example of the policy games they play. A person I know had got work out of state and their house was in this state and they had a pipe freeze and burst. Well, they were gone for 30 days. They came back. There's all this water damage. Insurance company said, no, on section paragraph blah, section 3A, it says you have 14 days to discover it. If you don't discover it in 14 days, no coverage, we're out. So it's important. It's important to at least skim it to understand, you know, sometimes they'll put limitations on time where you have to make a claim through this process right. in this certain amount of time. And if you don't do it, they get to deny coverage. Denying coverage, like they love right. it. That's their favorite.
Read your terms and conditions. Speaking of which, car rental issues comes down to reading your terms and conditions. And they are confusing. And I told you, the last time I rented a car, I insisted on them printing out and letting me read the terms and conditions. And they got so frustrated with how long it took me to read the terms and conditions that they just approved it without getting me to sign. I never signed the terms and conditions.
Car rentals are a whole different world of insurance issues because, you know, you're still likely to get in a wreck in one. I've had people, so I always, always, always get the damage waiver. It's expensive as mm-hmm. get out, but I always get it. And people yell at me and they laugh at me and they're like, why are you wasting your money? You've got your insurance. And I'm like, because if I get a door ding, they're going to come after me. I'm going to have right. a claim for my insurance with my $500 deductible or whatever it is, Whereas if I just pay for this damage waiver, I could roll the thing down a cliff and say, well,
I know of situations where they've made it up. The car's been turned
back. They do all
back.
The time. Yeah.
Right.
I had a car that I rented that had been damaged before I got it. When they did the inspection, you know, when they go through, they didn't write it down. Well, I think it got damaged under their watch and they didn't write it down. So when I came back and I was tired. I wasn't thinking. I come back and they start pointing at this damage. I said, no, it was like that before I left. They said, no, it's not marked. I said, well, I have the damage waiver. And he just went, oh, you can just see the disappointment. Like, oh,
maybe
so,
he was on the commission system.
No, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was erected in the yard and had to somehow get it fixed.
Okay, so let's talk about getting educated. First thing you do is you listen to this, but is there a Car Insurance for Dummies book that's gets into the real deal, or is there a course you can take? How do you get really smart on car insurance?
That's hard. I did some research. There is apparently an Auto Insurance for Dummies book. I don't know if it's still in publication. I couldn't tell.
I couldn't find it. I looked.
Yeah, it's like old, and you have to go to the old bookstores. I wouldn't trust the websites.
Right.
Insurance commissioner's office can have some good information. I like AAA's site. They had some good information.
Right.
I think finding your local insurance broker, and you could ask other professionals, other lawyers,
right,
for referrals. You know, it could be lawyers or accountants or whatever. You know, who do you use, and just interviewing them and understand somebody who's willing to educate you. If the insurance broker is not captured by a company and will just sit down and go over these policies and help you understand what you're getting, that, I mean, I've been doing claims for a long time and I'm still learning about products
right
that are available to even know about. So,
right,
and don't be afraid to ask, you know, what do the rich people get, or how do you do this? Because it was really eye-opening to me when to get that uninsured umbrella, which is it's an amazing policy, because it basically says, here's your liability umbrella, and in that umbrella, $1 million is underinsured motorist coverage.
Right.
So it was like, wow, really? That's really cool. But they had to go to underwriting to get it. So you're not going to get that online. Don't, for heaven's sakes, don't.
I can't imagine why anybody would buy insurance online. I just think it's...
No. I'll tell you, it's frustrating day in and day out when you're going to people and they're just like, well, I've got this coverage, and then you just go through and there's where they check the box where they didn't want this, and they check the box where they got that, and you need insurance before you have to buy insurance before you need it. Don't think you can have a collision and then somehow get a policy in place. It doesn't work that way.
So, how do you maintain due diligence on your company? If I have a company which I think is good, but then some private equity company comes in and starts draining them and playing, you know, they bring in McKinsey to change the model, how do I stay?
I'll confess, the company I use right now is Liberty Mutual. They're terrible. I mean, they're on the list of those companies. It's really hard because that you're not going to know their behavior until you have to deal with the
right
claim.
Right.
Now, there are, you can go on to some state insurance commissioners keep track of the number of complaints. I know Washington does, for example. You can kind of weed out the companies that have the most complaints. If you stay small and smaller and local, it tends to be better.
Well, the other thing is, if I stick with the mutuals, the private equity guys can't come in and take them over and flip them.
But, you know, some of the mutuals are still doing some of this.
I know. I agree.
But yeah. I agree. I mean, you know, it's better than the big, well, you know, than the public companies.
Right. And I hate to say this, one of the reasons they behave this way is because the customer is price sensitive, not terms and conditions sensitive. Right?
Right. I'll tell you, that Geico is owned by Warren Buffett. And it's his favorite company. And I have knockdown dragouts with Geico all the time.
Right.
And you know, it's a battle every time. So really, you really want to get an independent broker and a smaller company.
I went to see many, many years ago, I went to see my broker when I was getting a supplemental for Medicare. And And he said, oh, well, you want this because that's Warren Buffett's. I said, anybody but Buffett.
No.
Buffett.
No.
Anybody. No. Anybody but Buffett. Anybody but Buffett. Okay. So what about independent catastrophic insurance? I told you I have this independent AAA add-on. Does it make sense to also get add-ons from independent people?
Yeah, I would. I haven't done that yet because I was able to do it through my policy. But either way, you want something. I think my umbrella policy is less than $1,000 a year. I mean, it's not a lot of money.
Right.
And, you know, heaven forbid.
Right. Given what it buys you when you.
Yeah. I mean, because it at least buys me a policy I can sue to get. I have something to go after. And if I'm not covered, we're focused on the big, but don't forget the small, like rental car coverage. I can't tell you how many people I've represented. They say, well, I don't have a car. I said, you have rental coverage. No, I didn't get that. Why didn't you get that? Because now you're, if an insurance company can sit there and investigate fault for 30, 60, 90 days, they'll do it. They'll sit there and your car will get towed to a tow yard, and then they'll be auctioning it off to cover the cost. And the insurance company is saying, well, we've still got to interview two witnesses and we've been playing phone tag for 6 months. So, yeah, you want to be able to make sure you have the cover.
When during the litigation, it got so dicey, I spent an extraordinary amount of money hiring a really good insurance attorney to teach me how to hold my insurance company accountable. Because they used to keep trying to break the rules.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, they were really playing for the other team. So they were playing for the other team. And I had this great attorney who would just, you know, I had to become an expert in insurance law and hold them accountable. And it was, you know, I learned a whole world of insurance law. But it was like a war. And
it is.
Anyway, sometimes you may need that. But there are attorneys who will represent you warring with your insurance company, right?
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done it for free for people. I'm getting sued. And I don't know what to do. I call that karma representation.
Okay, so let's go back and say, okay, I'm getting a new policy. You know, what we're saying is, one, use a broker and use a company with good reputation in your jurisdiction, if you can.
Yeah.
Two, know your state laws and protections. Three, read and understand the terms and conditions. Take the time up front. You don't want to do it on the back end. And you know, the reliability of the broker and the company in this situation is more important than price. And you want to make sure your broker helps to educate you so you really know what you're doing. You want to make sure you're fully insured even if the other party's not. So you're fully insured if they are, and you're fully insured if they're not.
You want to assume that the other party, that you're going to get hit and there's not going to be any, no one's going to have insurance. Just assume it. Because it's, I'm telling you, it's, well, I think one of the first expenses people cut down on is their insurance. And every time the economy starts to turn down a little bit, people start dumping their auto insurance.
Oh.
Because you'll buy I've seen this over and over. They buy a 6 month policy, they get their insurance card and they quit paying. And then they're dropped. There's no coverage for payment. There's no law on the planet that says, I mean, if I were an insurance company, I'd love to collect $500 from a million people and then be able to drop them all and then I'd keep the money. So you'll think they have insurance. And it's like the insurance company says, no, they quit paying a month after they got their cards.
Right.
Now you're stuck. And then you got to go after somebody who has no money or assets and good luck. You have better luck going to the grocery store and grabbing a turnip and squeezing blood out of it.
So that's one thing. Make sure your premiums are current or up to date. Make sure you're protected for death and long-term disability, which may be different. You know, it may be a life insurance policy, a disability. It may be, but make sure you've got a package for the worst case. And then don't buy an electric car before you understand the insurance and the collision costs associated. I mean, I can't understand why anybody would ever buy an electric car, given what I've heard from you. I mean, I just think you've got to, you know, if you're a billionaire and you're willing to underwrite the whole cost with essentially no protection, you know, God love you and you want to do it.
Yeah, good
I don't
luck with
know.
that.
Good luck with
Yeah,
that.
it's shocking. There's very few people who will work on electric cars. So therefore, the time frame to fix the car can be out for months. And then I mentioned the loss of use claim that happened. So they just total the car and they cut all that off. And now your car's totaled.
It's not a car, it's like a remarkable luxury. You know, if you can afford,
Right.
you know, a yacht and an electric car, then, you know, have at it. And finally, I would just add archiving. Please.
Your policy is going to be electronic. Print it, print it, print it, print it. Keep
Right.
it as a PDF. Keep a paper copy.
Okay.
Private, because you've got to be able to have that argument. Because if it's going to come down to the policy language in your policy, and you say, no, that's not what my contract said. And they say, well, where is it? Well, you have it. Well,
Right. Here, there are a couple related things I want to stress. One is keep your car in good working condition. I mean, that's a simple thing to do. And one of the reasons I don't want any of this digital stuff in my car is I can get people I trust locally to keep it in great condition as long as I don't have all that monkey business that's making a mess and the sensors are constantly going off or whatever.
yeah, and
But
keep a receipt. If you have brand new tires and your car gets totaled and you have the receipt, that'll help, you know,
right.
because those tires have value.
Back to archiving, the other thing is you want to have a healthcare proxy. You really want to know in an accident who you can turn to help you navigate the healthcare system, particularly if you're not conscious. And you know, I had a dear friend who was a Navy contract officer, and so she was a master at this, and she had us trained with her healthcare proxy, and then I was her financial, I had a power of attorney on her financial stuff, and between the two of us, we would share responsibility. Every time they tried to trick her or roll her, they couldn't because we were all trained to protect her. We were like food dogs. And I just think that kind of, and Georgie, you know, being a contract officer, she would just snap us and make us do this. And I would say, you know, this is depressing. I don't want to talk about this. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, then I saw her training, her planning and her training with the healthcare proxy and the financial power of attorney really saved her life and extended her life. It was amazing. So that's related and I'm a big believer. Okay, so tell us, Matt, on your how do we find you and your website? And I'm going to put up links to all your great articles and interviews at the Solaria Report, but anything you want to say about how to find you? We know you don't have a strong social media presence.
You won't find me on any social media except Connect. But you know, my website is mrhale.law, and it looks like Mr. Hale. And I kind of laugh. Maybe I'll joke about it, but it's my initials, really. But that's my website if you want to get a hold of me that way. And you know, I think you want to know. You just I only work in Washington for now, but you kind of want to have an idea of who the players are in your area, and you know, maybe even see if an attorney, you'd be amazed at how many, especially personal injury attorneys, they're used to free consultations, you know, a quick call or something to say, hey, you do this, you know, who do you recommend for insurance? And then I
Right.
can't tell you how many
That's
personal injury,
true.
and then I meet the personal
They
injury
will
attorneys
know.
who have GEICO. And
You're kidding.
oh no, yeah. It, yeah, because, well, it was cheaper. Good for you. Now, this is why you know, I've represented attorneys who have been injured who had GEICO. We ended up going to the mat. You know, we did well, but it was just a knockdown, drag out battle.
Reminds me of one time I had a dear relative dying in the hospital, and I went to see, and all the this is a very important case, and you had about 12 doctors who come together to try and figure out how they could save this person, and they were all smoking non-filtered cigarettes. Thought, really? Really? Okay. Okay, well, your car insurance. This is important. And you know, I drive so much. I've driven I don't know, maybe 60 hours in the last month all over the country. And I really appreciate you're doing this, Matt, because something is changing, something is happening. And I think if you spend the time up front and make sure you've thought about this, you're prepared, and you will navigate the system much more successfully and avoid a world of hurt. And I know you've told me stories that just could bring any person to tears of what can go wrong if people aren't prepared. And so I really appreciate your doing this. We'll put up links to your articles and other interviews. And anything in closing that you'd like to stress to the folks listening?
Just assume that you're going to get hit by somebody. You know, just game it out. How is this going to look? And okay, I get hit. What do I do? Scenario plan, right? That's what you do.
Right. And backcasting. I sailed through because I was prepared.
Exactly.
Okay. Matt Hale, your car insurance, thank you very much. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
Give my love and best to everybody in Sandpoint, Idaho, okay?
We'll do it.